Our next speaker is April Melvin. She's probably not, unless she's changed the work she's doing, talking about Furno. So,
but I have a collaborator in Virginia.
Oh, geez. So pay close attention. The title of her talk is Investigating the Effects of Increased Soil Calcium Availability on DOC and Desorption. April.
Thanks, Ivan. So I first want to acknowledge my collaborators, Brian Strom at Virginia Tech, and my advisor, Christy Goodale, at Cornell. And this is some work that I'm doing as a small part of a larger study where I'm looking at how changes in soil calcium availability affect carbon and nitrogen cycling and storage in forests. So as we've heard in most of the talks earlier in this session, we know that there are negative impacts of acidification on forest ecosystems, and this is often linked to a decline in soil calcium availability. And when we think about this and nutrient retention, we often are looking at biological processes and how that this affects the health of an ecosystem and the retention of nutrients within the system. And then when we have declines in this nutrient status, that can even move downstream into aquatic systems. But there's often a biological focus to these questions. And what I'm interested in with this study is looking at abiotic processes and how changes in soil calcium availability might then affect mechanisms that retain soils through abiotic means. And specifically, I want to focus on the role of calcium in affecting stabilization of organic matter in forest soils, and looking specifically at dissolved organic matter. So there are many mechanisms known to control dissolved organic matter in soils, and I'm going to focus in on cation bridging, but I first want to recognize that there's a whole suite of factors that can affect DOM retention. And some of those are linked closely to acidification, such as changes in cation exchange capacity or soil pH. But others include the soil carbon content, the crystalline structure of iron and aluminum, surface area of the soil, as well as clay content. But again, I want to focus in here on cation bridging and the role that calcium plays in this process. So I want to start by walking you through a conceptual model of calcium acting as a cation bridge. And I realize this may be a refresher for some of you, but perhaps an introduction to this also if you haven't thought about it before. So what we have here is a simplified soil surface with base cations residing on exchange sites. And if you focus your attention here on calcium, this is a divalent cation, which means that it's using some of its positive charge to reside on that exchange site, but it also has some residual positive charge, which can then interact with negatively charged molecules in that soil solution, such as dissolved organic matter. And when these interact, there can be a bond that's formed between that dissolved organic matter and the calcium. And in this way, the calcium is acting as a bridge between the mineral soil surface and the dissolved organic matter. And this has two really important functions. It both prevents that DOM from being leached from the ecosystem, but it can also inhibit the decomposition of that organic matter and lead to greater retention of DOM in the soil. So if we have a system where we can increase our calcium availability, we might then expect that we're going to increase the pH of that system, increase its exchange capacity, as well as the exchangeable calcium residing on those exchange sites. And if we have more sites available for this binding, we might then expect that we'll increase our dissolved organic matter retention via this cation bridge. So with this model in mind, our objective was to investigate how increasing exchangeable calcium would influence DOC and DON sorption on mineral soils. And our hypothesis then was that when we increase exchangeable calcium, we'll increase sorption of these dissolved nutrients. So I'm conducting this work at the Woods Lake watershed, which is located in the western Adirondacks. This area was severely impacted by acid deposition. This is a 200-hectare watershed, and in 1989, they added a single lime application of 7 tons per hectare to two subcatchments, S2 and S4 here. And the soils at this site are a spodosol, and it's overlain by a very large forest floor that has a very nice horizonation of OE and NOA layers. And 20 years after this single application of lime, we see the effects of the lime pretty deep within the soil profile, down to 30 to 40 centimeters. So what you can see here, in the black, we have the control soils. This is depth on the y-axis, soil pH. and the white is the lime. So we see this increase in pH deep within the profile, and we also see it in exchangeable calcium content, where we have significantly higher exchangeable calcium in the lime plots relative to those that were left as controls. So our methods for this study were first to go out and collect collect forest floor samples from the OE NOA horizons in both control and limed plots. And we also collected soils from these sites in three depth increments. So we brought this back into the lab. We extracted the DOM from the two types of forest floor materials. And then we took this and we wanted to create an isotherm. So we have six concentrations of DOC from the limed and the control plots. We have our highest concentration was 100% of our extractant down to 0%. This was a serial dilution. And we did this in a 0.01 molar sodium chloride background to control for ionic strength. And we then added these to our three soil depths for the control and the treated soils. And we were most interested in how the dissolved organic matter would be affected by the soils, this difference in exchangeable calcium. But we also wanted to be sure that the source of that DOM wasn't a confounding factor. So we had three treatments. We had control DOM with control soil, lime DOM with limed soil, and then a control DOM added to our limed soil. And so we added this DOC with each of these treatments, took it in a batch equilibration for 24 hours, and then filtered off the solution and analyzed that. So before I talk about the data, I just want to orient you to this figure. This is an initial mass isotherm. So across the x-axis, we have the initial DOC content, and this is for each of those six dilution concentrations that we had. The y-axis is the difference between the initial and the final DOC concentration. And on these isotherms, the zero on the y-axis is very important. So we're looking at a difference here. So anything above zero means that we had a net retention of DOC on that soil surface, and anything below zero means we had a net release of DOC from the soil when we added this additional solution. So the first thing that we can take away from this is that we had a net release of DOC from the soil surface regardless of treatment in our 0 to 10 centimeters of soil. But what we do see is that there's a significantly larger loss of DOC from the soil surface in our control DOC, control soil treatment. And also the original source of that DOC, whether it was from the limed or the control plots, was less of a factor than the source of the soil. So exchangeable calcium in the soil seems to be playing a greater role in the net release versus the source of that initial DOC. So if we then move deeper into the soil to our 10 to 20 centimeters, we see a similar pattern where we have a net release from the soil surface regardless of how much DOC we added. It's a little bit less loss than in the 0 to 10, but still a net loss. And again, we see this pattern where the control soils are losing more DOC than the limed soils. And when we get to 20 to 40 centimeters of mineral soil, we start to have a narrowing here where the response is pretty similar between the treatment and the control soils. But if you recall back to the figure where I had the exchangeable calcium content, once you get to 20 to 40 centimeters, the difference between the control and the limed is much smaller. So if we then move on to DON, we see a similar response where we have a net release from the soil surface regardless of concentration in the 0 to 10 centimeters. And again, the control seems to be losing a larger amount of DON from the soil surface relative to the limed soils. And again, the source of that DOM does not appear to be a driving factor. And at 10 to 20 centimeters, we see the same pattern, a smaller net release, but again, we're losing more from controls. And when we get to 20 to 40 centimeters, we're still having a loss, but it's getting much closer to having a net retention of DON. So just to conclude on this, I think this work suggests that when you increase your soil calcium availability, you can reduce your losses of DOC and DON in these upper mineral soils. And when we're thinking about acidification in these ecosystems, it's important to keep this abiotic mechanism in mind because it could have large implications for retention of DOC and DON and its export from these systems. And with that, I would just like to thank my committee members and help that I had in the lab in the field. Thank you.
Time for questions.
Yeah.
What was the soil pH?
The soil pH? It was around 4. Sorry. It was.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, how can you rule out everything else and say it's calcium when you have pH differences, likely kind of put out sulfate differences? There's a lot of other competing anions. How do you know what was the carbon concentration of the horizon? I mean,
so
a lot of other factors that just said,
right,
you know,
right. Right, and the carbon doesn't vary significantly between these two treatments. My exchangeable aluminum doesn't vary. I mean, there is the effect of the soil pH, but I recognize that this is, I guess the question is more, is how does changes in soil calcium and the associated soil properties that come with that change affect absorption in the soils?
But that's different than saying it's calcium bridging than saying that calcium-mediated change in pH is. We know pH changes in these isotherms quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
So saying it's a pH effect is different than saying it's a calcium bridging effect. I don't think you have it both ways there.
Yeah, well, we're increasing our pH, we're increasing the ability of calcium to reside on those. We're increasing our CEC and the possible exchange sites on which that calcium might then be bound.
Do you have any idea about which
cations or anions that I'm bouncing off, what might already be bridged to a calcium?
Well, ammonium and potassium are below calcium on the lower trophic series, and aluminum and hydrogen are above it.
Right.
So if you bounced off one versus the other, you could go one way or the other with this bridging, it seems.
Mm-hmm. Potassium content is very, very low in these soils. And the other base cations that I looked at don't differ between the treatment and the control. Really, it's just the calcium that differs in these soils.
Did you measure aluminum?
So I measured aluminum that came out in my ammonium chloride extract. I didn't do any additional aluminum speciation.
You said aluminum stayed the same.
The exchangeable aluminum in this ammonium chloride extract did not differ. Right.
Could you try like barium or something like that? I mean, do some experiments with another two charge cation. It might be a little boring, but calcium does have a bunch of, it's a little more biologically exciting than some of these other things.
Yeah. Yeah, that could be interesting to look at. I'm looking at stocks of carbon and nitrogen in the forest floor and mineral soils. I'm looking at above ground production and tree growth over this 20-year period also, and rates of nitrogen cycling.
Are you looking at roots at all?
I am quantifying roots in the soil cores that I've taken, and I don't have data on that yet.